I'm hopeful, regardless of the outcome. Boost of positive energy without one. Sorry about the jab, I'm on a holy field. I'm bearing fruit, but demons try to eat them like Yoshi meal. I piss them off the Batman like Falcone deals. Jungle full of predators, I know how Mowgli feels. So I got the fire, refuse to live in fear. I can spot suppliers, eating fresh rules. Call me private label, I'll be leaving.
All right, welcome everybody to the Permaculture Pimpcast, the only pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. We're going to probably cover all three in this episode. Once again, another bonus episode. Remember, it's brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Also, Heaven's Harvest, y'all, 10% off with promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. We're going to handle all the ads right up front because I don't want to take a single thing away from my guest here today. Take a look around in the world, y'all. EMP Shield. Need I say more? $50 off with promo code PERMA. And don't forget that forget about those Harvest Right freeze dryers. And I'd be remiss for all those out there who are wanting to congregate with the with others that might think a little bit like you. You're going to have that opportunity at the home at the Heritage Life Skills Conference. That's going to be in, well, we're going to link it down below. It's here in North Carolina. I'm going to be there, but more importantly, William Forstgen, who wrote the book 1 Second After, he's going to be there as well. That's going to be July 21st through the 23rd. And y'all do not forget, put it on your calendar, October 28th and 29th, Kentucky Sustainable Living. You're going to want to go there because there's going to be a lot of cool stuff. My man Darren from Hacks from the Homesteader, he's going to be processing the pig. I'm going to be his assistant. And in addition to that, y'all, there's going to be a fundraiser for Vets for Child Rescue. And the tickets for that is going to be, you know, it's going to be a pretty good meal. Tickets for that are going to be $250. Almost all of it, minus what it takes to feed you folks, is going to go to nab all those nasty, unbelievable, filthy, need to be tossed into a wood chipper pedophiles. And, yeah, that's what they're going to be raising money for. So keep that in mind. All right, y'all, without further ado, I want to go into a guest that I've been corresponding with for, I think, a while now. And for a while there was in the podcast game himself. And saw a little bit about his background and thought, okay, I got to get him on the show for a bunch of reasons. But we'll cover that while we're here. Eli, my man, how you doing? I don't know if people want to know your last name, but if you want to deliver it, go right ahead and tell them.
Yeah, Eli's fine. I'm doing well. How are you doing, Billy?
I'm good. It's great to finally put a name to a face because, as many of you know, I've corresponded with some of you and know a little bit about your story. We're going to get more of you on here. It's not just going to be the guests out there that everybody's heard of. Just like the last few, you're going to meet people here that are doing extraordinary things or have made extraordinary choices in their lives that might help a lot of you on the fence to figure out, you know what, I think I can do it too. Well, one of them today has made an extraordinary change in his life, changes actually. And we're going to let him kind of tell his story. So, Eli, why don't you give us every good superhero story has an origin story. Why don't you tell us yours?
Well, Billy, I grew up in Northern California. My family's thing was sports. So started running track when I was 4, got into football and basketball as well. And growing up where I did, I thought sports was the way to success. So did that in high school, ran track, played football in high school, went on to a local college for football where I suffered an injury, ended up doing a few different jobs, personal training and working in parks and recreation. And eventually I joined the Air Force where I became an aircraft mechanic and worked as an honor guardsman as well for a couple years. And then I eventually joined the local sheriff's department. And I did that for 7 years. It was a good time. Definitely at that point, I was 28 when I started that portion of my life, and it felt good till 2020 when it became very apparent that instead of working for the community that I thought I was signed up to work for, I was more so working for the politicians. Dealt with some riot stuff there in California, and basically had orders not to help the people like the mom and pop shops that needed help, and instead was told to protect those entities, buildings that were protected by the politicians. And so then around, it was 2019, so just before 2020, in December, had my daughter. So with that, all the things that were happening within law enforcement in 2020, as I said, and then with having my daughter, definitely decided that wasn't the place to raise a family. So me and my wife left the rest of our extended family there and moved to Idaho. And we recently just moved into an even smaller town in Idaho. At first, we were in a town with about 55,000. Now we're in a town with 4,000. And so we got started. We got 12 chickens at this point, producing our own eggs, started a bakery, just kind of baking from home, doing that kind of stuff. And just overall, just trying to learn from people like you, Billy, and your son, your family, just kind of be self-sustaining. Because me and my wife see a lot of the problems going on in the world and the powers that shouldn't be. And at first, I thought we could talk our way out of it, tell people, you know, explain to people what's going on. But the more we did that, you realize it just doesn't work that way. People have to go down that path themselves and be open to it, to learning. And so now I just realize, yeah, it's just about self-sustainability. So we're trying to become as self-sustaining as possible. My goal is to start getting our meals to where we produce 100% of it, or at least 90% of it, to where we can self-sustain. Started off just prepping, you know, kind of buying the foods and stuff for storage. And now I realize it's about longevity. As my wife says, it's a lifestyle change. It's not something we could just go out, buy the food, and sit back and watch the world burn while we enjoy our planning ahead. It's just completely trying to limit our dependency on the system so that we're providing for ourselves.
I want to back you up a little bit, and particularly back to your law enforcement days. Now, many of the people that are listening to this PimpCast right now, and a number of others, seem to think that these issues extend almost entirely from a national level. Well, one of the things that I learned, and I knew, but I had to have it reinforced basically with my correspondence with you, and it was just a giant eureka moment for me, is that the same things that are happening on a national level, we tend to forget are happening on a local level. Because when you told me that you were witnessing literally getting orders, because it's still a mistake, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but even in a law enforcement capacity, you're still working under a hierarchy. Somebody's given orders and you have to follow them generally and or exclusively. What I got from you is something, it had a mental reset for me, in that I'm like, holy cow, man, this stuff is happening at the most local levels. Can you go into a little bit more about that? I want to get into your whole story because it's extraordinary, but let's start right there and tell us, because most of us think that these things happen exclusively by the FBI or the marshals or whatever. Here you are, a local law enforcement guy, and you're seeing it there. I mean, was this a gradual thing? Did you see it coming? Did it start off great and then get bad? Why don't you give us a little history on that? All right, a little bit of a technical difficulty, but we're back, and we were discussing. I'm not sure how far we got into it before we fell out, but the question was, most of us tend to think that scandals and scoundrels and cutthroats only seem to happen on a national level. We hear a lot about it in the FBI right now. We think about some of the stuff that we've heard about the federal marshals and all these other federal institutions, but through you, come to realize that it's not exclusive to them. Can you go into a little bit more about your experience regarding that? Because you were working at the sheriff's level, right?
Yeah. So basically, local law enforcement has been federalized through the funding mechanisms. So with grants from the state, from the federal government, essentially local law enforcement no longer is completely dependent on your local tax dollars. It's dependent on federal and state funding. And with that comes basically stipulations in which they have to adhere to certain things at federal and state level that aren't necessarily in the interest of local government or the local community. And well, so
you explained a lot there just right off the bat why There's a number of people out there wondering why a single local sheriff hasn't done anything concerning this jab issue. I won't go into too much detail on that, but I think you just explained the reasons why we don't see people jumping up. If it all comes down to the almighty dollar, or you're afraid you might lose your funding, now I understand why so many are tongue-tied.
Yeah, exactly. So if you see your local law enforcement with things like unmarked vehicles, or they suddenly have another unit, a motor unit, you know, doing traffic tickets and whatnot. If you actually look at their budget, more often than not, that wasn't in their budget based off of what they're provided by the local jurisdiction. That's additional funding that they're getting with these grants and things. And also that's what invites certain personnel into law enforcement, is all the toys and whatnot they can get. So your local law enforcement is trying to recruit personnel. And even that is basically federal and state funded. That's not necessarily because they need it. It's because it's out there. So they're getting that funding. And so whether or not you want it, there's going to be additional police and sheriff's deputies out there because they have a means of finding the funding for it.
I see. Well, I guess, you know, if they see themselves getting something like free money, I guess they're not fully considering the strings that are going to be attached to that, because now all of a sudden you got yourself addicted to this funding, and now what are you going to do without it? So I think this is where we see a lot of compromises in law enforcement. And until now, until you said that, I never really put two and two together. So let me ask you, so here you are working in law enforcement. Clearly you got into it to protect and serve. And why don't we go into a little more detail concerning, you know, you saw them protecting essentially the interest. Do I understand you right when you say you saw orders being given for you to protect the interests of the political establishment or the people that were greasing the palms of these politicians?
Yeah, exactly. So for starters, to get into like that federal funding as well, like the unit I belonged to was a community oriented unit. And so we were about half our unit was federally funded. And then additionally, we got other grants and whatnot. I was paid for a month to stay at home, you know, and I thought that was ridiculous in 2020. Here we are getting this funding and whatnot. But why were we able to do that? Well, because the funding stipulated that basically we do that. And specifically, I was working with the youth, in which I thought this is the time we should be reaching out to these kids who are in these different situations at home and whatnot, living in 200 square foot apartments with, you know, five siblings. Instead, we were told, no, stay at home. And in fact, don't do any programs. Don't go reach out to them. So that was part of it as well. And then in California, where you had politicians who were doing the kneeling and whatnot in front of the cameras. So the way it works with jurisdictions, I worked for the sheriff's department. We were called into the city for assistance. So that comes basically from the city and then the state level. And those were two politicians, the governor and the mayor, who in front of the camera were doing the kneeling and saying all this stuff is okay to do. But behind the scenes, they called us in for reinforcement. And I was getting paid probably like double overtime, essentially, to get in my riot gear. And then it was where I was at in the Capitol. There was an arena in the surrounding kind of nice area around that. And then there was the Capitol. And that's specifically where we were told to be, was protect those things. So even though there was local mom and pop shops, say, across the street or whatnot, and we could see whether it was fires or know that they were getting ransacked, we were told to stand our ground, stay where we were at. And to be honest, it was like a picnic. It was a bunch of young kids running around in skinny jeans looking for something to do. And the mom and pop shops were the easy targets because we were the ones protecting the more wealthy areas.
Eli, let me jump back in a little bit. We're having more of that same technical difficulty on your end. I'm going to monologue for a moment here and just kind of give my thoughts. If you want to go ahead on your end and try to fix whatever that is, because at this point, honestly, I've interviewed a lot of people in my career, y'all, and I've never, ever, ever, it seems like every single time we get into this topic, all of a sudden we seem to have technical difficulties where his voice is being drowned out. We thought it was one thing, and then it was another, and then another, and another. Yeah, if you come from that school of thought where I do, where these things just don't happen all the time by accident. Like I said, I've interviewed a lot of people, and or I'm on a phone call with somebody else, whether it's Aaron T. Scott or a number of others, where we constantly get our transmissions jumbled with, gargled with, whatever the case may be. I've never had this kind of difficulty, and I think it has entirely to do with the topic we're on. So we're going to go right back to Eli and do another sound test here.
Test, test, test. Is that better or worse?
Sound like a great. Sound great. Okay. Now, all of a sudden, so here we are back to square one. But you know what? I don't care if we got to do this thing with smoke signals, bro. We're going to get this done. there's no – so whoever the powers that shouldn't be are that might be screwing around with this or whatever forces of darkness that may be in, well, I rebuke each and every one of you in the name of Jesus. So so back to it. Clearly, you're breaking open a lot of ground here regarding what was actually going on, because everything you said was not at all reported, at least the real nuts and bolts of this. It wasn't reported by any news media that I'm aware of. I mean, is there anything else you could tell us about this whole thing?
Well, just the part that I felt bad about, it was, again, that how much money we were making coming from basically essentially the taxpayers we basically had a setup in which, while we were shutting down the rest of the world, the rest of the community, we were just making gangbusters as far as finances. And for me, once I was on the road, you know, in my vehicle and hearing the essential, non-essential as well, I just shook my head and said, something's not right here. There's no way I should be getting paid by taxpayers' dollars. And while at the same time telling those same people with the taco trucks, the restaurants, the massage parlors, the nail salons, that they're non-essential. And so that too was a wake-up call with me making so much money off of this thing while telling other people to stay in their homes. And for me, it became apparent too, just by being in uniform, I was making a statement, even if I didn't, and a lot of us didn't agree with the politicians. But I remember several times where just by walking by someone in uniform, I see them put their mask on all of a sudden, you know? And then in a couple occasions where they told me it was because they saw me. And I just thought that's just not right. So I just felt like I was representing those unlawful orders simply by showing up in uniform. And I didn't enjoy that aspect either.
Man, you are such a joy to talk to, because what you just said there, as far as unlawful orders, that was exactly the words I was going to use. But I can't help but think that also, it's amazing how money can make so many people compromise their ethics. So if they're paying, do you think maybe that the other officers might have compromised their ethics simply because they were paying double overtime?
Absolutely. And not in a way necessarily, I don't think necessarily the conscious decision, but to get into perhaps a little hearsay, but basically I worked also on a unit with the California Highway Patrol, who was connected to, basically that's who protects, say, the governor, for example. He has his own team of California Highway Patrol. So basically I found out, like, that guy was going to ski every weekend, basically, during that whole time shutting down all of California.
Well, you're saying Governor Newsom, in addition to being caught at the French Laundry, which is one of the most swankiest restaurants on the planet, when he was telling everybody to mask up, you're telling me this clown got on the first thing smoking, heading over to go skiing?
Yeah, in Nevada, in Lake Tahoe, basically, was his place where he liked going. And if you think about that, even with some of the agenda they got going on with the green stuff, trying to take away gasoline and whatnot. But basically, it'd be like 9 SUVs to take him and his family every weekend to go skiing. In addition, I knew people who kids were in soccer as well with his kids. And come to find out, he was sending his kids to Arizona to play soccer. While shutting down soccer fields in California. So things like that just rubbed me the wrong way. But to speak on the money thing, you know, that's what it was with, like, the CHP who guards people like the governor. They're getting paid a lot. So when they're going up skiing and whatnot, yeah, they kind of don't think about it as, you know, this is wrong. They're saying like, hey, I'm making $200,000 right now to hang out at the ski resort. And so, yeah, there's a lot of that. And I mean, I've made six figures essentially doing what I was doing. And I was getting paid enough to look the other way. It definitely was something to where, looking at taking care of my family and having bills to pay and a wife to keep happy, I disagree with it, but I also understand where people are coming from when, you know, they just want to keep the lights on, pay the bills, just like the average Joe. But for me, it became something more when I realized the politicians I was representing and the unjust nature of what they were doing.
Okay, we're having more of that same technical difficulty, so I'll go ahead and let you see what you can do to work on that as well. You know, clearly, Eli, when you find yourself in that position, it had to ultimately hit a point of critical mass where you find yourself saying, okay, you know what, I may be profiting quite well at this, things may be good, but you decided that the status quo, I just got to know that transition where clearly you didn't like the situation you were in and you wanted to change it. Was there a eureka moment? Was there something that happened that said, that made you say, okay, enough, and I'm going to get on the first thing smoking?
My daughter, just seeing her. She was a little baby at that time, just a few months old, and just what I was seeing there and what people were willing to accept. At the time, there was fires going on where we were at to where there was smoke coming in. And so it looked like Armageddon, basically. The sky was red and gray. I liked to garden at that time still. And my tomato plants just had like ash on them. And then you're being told to stay inside. My wife, you know, dealing with being a new mother. And so we knew some people in Idaho. And I said, let's just go visit them. Let's get out of here. This is just too depressing. And also, like, for about, I think about a month, I was getting paid to work from home, you know, which, again, I don't think was right. But yeah, I took advantage of that by coming up here to Idaho and visiting. And, man, you talk about a eureka moment. We got in we had to go through Oregon just barely and then came into Idaho. And it's green pastures, green soccer fields. And we did a double take. There was people on the soccer fields. There was kids, wow, and parents watching their kids play soccer. And I just remember thinking, like, that should not look weird. Why does that look weird to us? And so that started the idea of, yeah, we definitely need to get out of there. Because if that looks weird to us, just – what is it doing to our mental state of being if we think it's weird to see people playing soccer, little kids running around at the park? Because where we were, I mean, they cemented the mound. They put cement signs on the mounds of, like, baseball and softball fields telling people they can't play softball and whatnot. Wow. So to come to a place where, yeah, kids and parents were just hanging out outside, that was eye-opening.
So you basically realize, okay, where I am, and that happens to a lot of us out there, and I know there's a number of people listening right now, they can absolutely positively relate to where you started, and you're doing something that they wish they could do. They find themselves in this situation. I don't care if it's – I know people right now in Kansas City who want to escape, but they don't know how to do it. They feel like they're locked up in this job, or they can't save enough money, or whatever the case may be. And here you are, you get up there and you finally realize, okay, so you're like, so I imagine after that trip, going back to California would be like the Jews going back into Egypt after Moses delivered them. So what did that transition look like? I mean, how did you make that possible? And your coworkers, I mean, how did you separate yourself from there? You told a pretty interesting story to me on the phone about how, you know, there was just you and one other guy and you had a little something in common. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, another brother on the department. He actually was smart. He started his process, I think, the year prior to where they had already bought the land. And they saw problems earlier on just with the issues in California. But yeah, it was me and another brother, another black gentleman, who we were both leaving. I had told some coworkers, you know, hey, you know, I'm looking to move to Idaho. And then I found out this other guy who I was in the academy at the same time with, he was as well. So I've been up there to visit him. But basically, yeah, it was funny in law enforcement, at least within my department, a lot of people knew about Idaho and everyone talked about, oh, that's where I want to retire. That's where I want to go. Oh, I have family there. And then it was funny. I got a couple of calls when I moved here from people in the department who were just asking that question. How'd you do it? And it was funny because I always thought, I know what you make because I know what I made.
Right.
So I'm not sure. How do you not do it? You know, because at the time, basically what I did with the amount of money I was making, that was fortunate. I essentially was able to purchase the house here prior to moving. And it was baby steps because at first to convince my wife, I said, hey, if nothing else, it's a rental property, possibly. And then as things got worse, my wife said, okay, yeah, we could just go ahead and move. So, yeah, I was able to basically maintain two mortgages at once. And like I said, that was fortunate. And then so eventually sold that house in California. And as I said, we moved to a smaller town. We then sold the house that we initially had here. Because we wanted our own well, our own septic, and wanted to start living more of that kind of lifestyle of providing for ourselves. But yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, a lot of law enforcement, they're aware of wanting freedom. And, you know, they don't necessarily side with all the politics in California. But, yeah, they're getting paid to do that job. And so I think against some of their own dreams and aspirations, they continue down that path. Because like for me, I would say for those aspiring to do it, it's start planning now. It's never too late. And then also just be smart financially. I and my wife never liked a lot of nice things. My first big purchase when I joined law enforcement and got that check was paying, I think I paid $4,000 for a Honda Accord, stick shift.
I like the way you roll. Definitely. Hey, one more time. We're going to have to, it looks like we're going to be in this cat and mouse thing of, you know, interference and stuff like that. So I won't go into great detail, but he basically has to fix it. It seems every few moments, as you've been down this journey. Okay. So you finally got to Idaho. Now, I mean, okay, I got to believe that is a drastic, I mean, a qualitative difference from going where you were being totally accustomed to the weather in California to where you are in Idaho. Tell me how you make that transition.
Well, the good far outweighs the negative. I mean, that just tells you how bad California was, really. I'm in the high desert now. It's drier. So actually the heat is better as far as, you know, 90 degrees doesn't feel as hot as it does when it's higher humidity. So that part was kind of welcoming. Not as great for growing stuff, I suppose, but yeah, as far as feeling, that's good. And then just overall environment, just talking about California, me and my wife were just talking about this last night, in terms of racially as well, it's just in California, you can't go a day without it coming up. You know, it's someone trying to pat themselves on the back for their, quote, diversity or whatnot. And it's just something you're always aware of. Here in Idaho, I mean, you get a shake of the hand and it's what do you do for a living? And, like, what's your family situation? How many kids do you have? You know, and even when they ask what you do for a living, it's not in California where it was an ego thing. It was, right. Let me see if my label is better than yours. No, here it's genuine. If you say I work in plumbing, they'll say, oh, I need a plumber. You know, or I know someone who's hiring for a plumber. It's that kind of interest that they have. They aren't trying to one up you. They aren't trying to see if you're in the same industry to see if they could get something out of you. No, it's genuinely, how are you providing for your family, essentially, and how is your family doing? They shake your hand. I remember one of the first stops I made here was going to the gun store. because that was to get into that just a little bit, that was another eureka moment in California. I went to one of my sisters, older sisters, wanted me to take her out shooting at the shooting range. And so I said, okay, no problem. I got my military ID and I'm local law enforcement. Found out I hadn't paid attention, but the local laws, I went to get some 9mm ammo. And they were talking about I need a star ID card and all this stuff. And if I didn't have that, I needed to fill it out this background. Pulled out both my IDs and was thinking, I could get around this, right? Like, I'm just trying to go shooting.
Right.
This range. And sure enough, everyone in there just started, we were all kind of laughing about how everyone was getting out of California. We were like, yep, that's how it is. Yep. And it was like a $25 fee for this application. But you mean that someone could, you know, go get this ID and get the ammo, but working in law enforcement, I can't even get ammo to go shooting. And so that was another eureka moment to where I just shook my head and said, something's wrong with this. But yeah, so came here and went to a gun store. And I'm telling you, I walked in, a couple of guys ended up being like retired law enforcement from California. But overall, it was kind of weird. So I purchased a firearm. It was a 22 LR, and a guy who was there just chatting up, some old guys, you know, just hang out there. He said, "You got ammo for that?" And I said, "Oh, you know, I got this, you know, little box of 20 or something that, you know, came with it." He said, "I got a bunch of it. Why don't you stop by my place?"
Wow.
And I'm thinking, California. All right, what's this guy up to?
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to wind up in a pit with somebody throwing soap down on you saying, put the lotion on its skin. And up there, you got genuine people.
Yeah. And long story short, that's someone, and he was actually renting on this land from another gentleman who actually happened to be from the same area we were from in California. Nonetheless, those two gentlemen, older gentlemen, are friends to this day. It's been a few years now. And let's nothing bad happened when I went to get the ammo. So, but yeah, that was just amazing. And you know, how many families that just on first meeting, you know, just say, hey, come over for dinner, you know, when you guys free. So it's just been so amazing in comparison to California, where it was, you know, it took a month to plan, you know, to have dinner with someone down the street from you. You know, everyone was just too busy to stop and just smell the fresh air.
That is fascinating. I hate talking about this stuff, but I got to, because, you know, the race baiting pimps out there, the Al Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, the Lamonts, you know, all these other people out there that make a real good living on creating racial strife. They're going to generally say, oh shoot, man, going up to a place like that, there's a bunch of white supremacists running around. There's a bunch of this, there's a bunch of that. What's been your experience?
As I say, yeah, people shake your hands and just genuinely care about you as a human being here, to where it just doesn't come up as it did in California, which is such a, I guess, a contradiction there. And even now I see the headlines in California, say like where I live, and they're talking about Asian hate crime. And I'm thinking, that neighborhood is all Asians. So they omit a lot. You know, it's that lie through omission. I'm thinking, you know, good and well was committing the crimes against Asians. It's other Asians, you know, whereas you don't have that same lies going on here in which people want to orient everything to race base, you know.
Let me jump in for a second again, Eli. We're having the same technical issue. He's going to deal with that, and then we'll come back to it. The only reason I'm even bringing up race right now is, by and large, you know, there are people in the media and a number of others out there that get a whole lot of hay on this. And you know what? You're listening right now to two brown people having a conversation about a great many things. So I want you to overlay this the next time you hear, because he just dropped really a tactical nuke of information there. You're telling me there's Asian hate crimes, well, as happening in Asian neighborhoods. What else can you tell us about that?
So, you know, the other omission is obvious. It's basically, if there's Asian hate, basically where I was, it's other Asians or it is blacks, right? That's what the makeup is. And so it was funny, even in 2020 and since then, when they would say things about all this hate in California, investigating this hate crime, that hate crime, I kept thinking, well, aren't you saying that all those people left California and they live in Alabama and everywhere else and in Idaho? And I'm thinking, so are you saying that someone from Alabama is traveling to San Francisco?
Wow.
Hate crimes. In California, they have it both ways. We're so tolerant, but yet, oh, we also have all these hate crimes that we're working on, you know? And I just don't get that contradiction and that it can't be both ways. If there is no, quote, racism in California, then how is there hate crimes? And if there's hate crimes, then how are you stating that you're such a great place to be?
Wow. Touche. I mean, I had to take a moment there because that's just absolutely profound. And I've heard nobody else say it. Now, let's transition into, okay, so you basically get on the first thing smoking out of California, just like a lot of other awesome patriots in California are feeling like they need to do right now. Find yourself in Idaho. You're there. Now, all of a sudden, what do you ultimately, because obviously you're going to give up your employment there in California.
Yeah.
What is that transition like to there? You mentioned earlier about a couple of enterprises you got going on. But what do you do what do you do to make a living? I'm not trying to get into your personal, what you make for a living, how much you make or whatever those, I'd never ask a question like that. I'm meaning, what do you do to put bread on the table at this point? Now that you've made this massive transition to a place where you don't know anybody.
Yeah, basically, it's that lifestyle change. So we were fortunate to have done well with some of those real estate decisions we made, in each of our homes that we've owned previously. And that's given us some leeway to basically right now I'm working on different skill sets and looking at different ventures. So we do everything from the in-home bakery to where we sell that at a couple of local stores. And then now I'm getting into contract work, building decks, doing home remodels and whatnot. Basically, I've made this change to wanting to do more with my hands and wanting to build my skill sets. So part of the decision of moving to this smaller town, too, was, again, financial. We made that choice. Basically, we moved into what Californians would consider a very nice home. And that's what we were looking for. It was, you know, we could brag to, not necessarily that we bragged, but we could show people in California, look at our nice home that we moved to here, right?
For half the price.
yeah. And so, but I realized I was naive about Idaho. I thought, you know, wherever I buy in Idaho, we'll be able to have some sheep and chickens. But no, we were in the neighborhood that mostly retirees and whatnot. And I won't say upscale, but it was a nice neighborhood in which we made the decision to go ahead and benefit from some of that equity that was built up there to basically downsize. So we got a smaller home, but more land. And so that was one of those financial decisions where we wanted to be smart in order to make this lifestyle change. Instead of simply saying, hey, we live in this really nice house, it's all right, what's our ultimate goal? We want to be self-sufficient. So let's move further out, less regulations and more land. And then with that, also, I used that as an opportunity. It was a home that needed a lot of work. And so I used my two hands and some help from friends to fix this place up, basically. So in that way, too, you know, we benefited financially by basically downsizing and learning to do more things for myself rather than simply living in luxury and in convenience. So those are the kind of decisions we're making to make this lifestyle possible, cutting down our budget. And like I said, learning how to do things more ourselves. And so with the baking, we're looking at, you know, growing our own stuff that we can then bake, or having the chickens, you know, with baking, you know, that's been really helpful with the eggs and whatnot. And so we're trying to basically do more things like that, along with a lot of friends out here, a lot of entrepreneurship. So I leave myself available for we got friends with taco trucks. So I help them on occasions, you know, contractor friends. I help them, the local church, things like that. I make myself available because I'm just in the stage of learning, kind of in relearning, basically, trying to change my perspective and where I am, to go from playing sports growing up And I realized, you know, that's a very short stint of my life in which now I'm playing catch up, trying to figure out the things that actually matter. Because no one's asking me if I could catch a ball still. No one's asking how high I could jump or how fast I could run. They could hand me a hammer, though, and ask me, hey, can you put that nail in through the 2x4? And so I'm trying to learn more of those skill sets to really start living life instead of just being a bystander, thinking that I need to live the dream of being an athlete or whatnot. That doesn't really work out for as many as it seemed as it did when I was a child.
Right on cue, Eli. Here goes the technical difficulty again. So I'll leave you to that. Wow, it seems like you're off and running in so many different places. And like so many others, myself included, where we've done that numerous times, going from place to place, finding a piece of property that needed work, go permaculture, pimp it out, and then move on to the next one until we finally hit where we are right now. And, you know, notwithstanding some calamity, this is where we intend to stay. So you're up there, you're gaining these skills. I got to ask, I mean, before I get into the next question, I got to wonder, considering your background in law enforcement, have you considered that as a career where you are, or are you just pretty much done with it?
Based off of my views, you know, it's something, I think I got a year left of my certification to where if I got to provide for my family and I have to, it's there in the back pocket. But ultimately, number one, where I was law enforcement there because I grew up there, and I have a thing where I think law enforcement should have a vested interest in the community they're policing, basically. And so I definitely did not want to come here and show up from another town, another state completely, and be handed a gun and a badge and be told that, you know, I have the right to enforce laws against the community in which I haven't established myself. So
that
initially,
that response alone makes you an extraordinary man. I kid you not. But I didn't mean to take you off your point, but I couldn't help it. Most people do not think that way, Eli. They don't. I mean, we saw it all over Texas where they would take law enforcement from one jurisdiction and on the weekends put them in another place because where we were in Texas, there was a for-profit prison industry and it's rather thriving. So they would take these people out of the communities where they normally police and then put them in a place where they don't police. And then they take people to jail, like my son, for having a dirty license plate, even though we live on a dirt road. So, I mean, I commend you just in terms of having that understanding that, hey, okay, I'm not really part of this community yet. I don't necessarily feel like I ought to be policing it yet. And maybe if I do grow into that, then maybe that's an option, like you said. I think that's extraordinary on your side.
Thank you. And you know, to speak on law enforcement, that's also one of the big problems. I would say it's in the ballpark, no less than 50% of the department I worked for lived outside of our own jurisdiction, which was a large jurisdiction. And again, not to fault them, you know, they're looking to provide a safe, you know, environment for their families and whatnot. But again, I think there's a issue there. If you can't even live within the jurisdiction, it's just a given. You don't have a vested interest.
Right.
So like when I worked in the county jail, for example, I came across people I grew up with, right? In comparison, and I viewed it as just like it's man to man. I'm going to talk to you just like as if we were in a dark alley. I'm not going to be a punk, but also I'm not going to degrade you because I know I got my backup right here and we could fight. But I definitely could see the difference in the law enforcement that, say, wasn't from the area or didn't live in the area. They would use every opportunity to lecture these inmates and to just talk down to them and whatnot, knowing they were about to go, you know, 20 miles away to go sleep at night. And I think there's something about living in the community and having somewhat of that risk. I'm not saying people have to necessarily put their families at risk, but something about knowing like you can bump into this person at the grocery store after they serve their time or whatever. There's something about that that's going to change the way you enforce the law, you know, and hopefully in a good way in which you hope that they become productive members of society again, rather than viewing them as someone you never have to deal with again.
I can't speak for anybody else, Eli, but I'm telling you what, if everybody else in law enforcement, particularly at the leadership levels, if they had that same mindset that you have right now, I think we'd be looking at a very different state of affairs. Now that you're, let me just kind of go back. I didn't mean to take you off your point, but you're an extraordinary person and you're doing a lot of extraordinary things and you're doing things that most people can only dream of, where you grew up in this place. This is largely what you know, notwithstanding your experience away at college and the Air Force. And then you find yourself back here. You're realizing, okay, this ain't working out. This is not the life I want to leave. And I'm going to do what most people would consider the most unbelievably uncomfortable thing in the world to do. And you know what? Your wife is to be commended too, because usually when this happens, there's only, believe me, there is such a thing as a permaculture divorce. I've seen it numerous times. And it is highly unlikely when both people are entrenched in a certain area for both of them to say, I've had enough, let's get out of here. And then okay being to actually making the move. I got to ask, I mean, your daughter's small, so I won't ask on that accord. Not to get into too much of your personal business, but does she enjoy the transition? How's this been for you largely? I mean, has this been a largely positive thing for her and or y'all as a family? Or are there things that you're struggling with still?
Yeah, I would say early on, definitely. There was a thing of trying to see eye to eye with it, but California in that way was a gift that kept giving the longer we stayed. The more reason my wife had to start questioning a lot of things. To the point now, yeah, my wife said this last night. She said, you know, we're a great team and that there's things to get, you know, a little down the rabbit hole that she was questioning that I was questioning. My thing was finance. I was always finance. So as far as looking at things. So in 2020, I was looking at the wealth transfer, for example, that was occurring. And I said that this is all weird, you know, the shutting down the mom and pops while keeping the big businesses open. My wife would come up with stuff like, did you know 9/11 was an inside job?
Oh, man. Okay. Hey, I got to jump in one more time, Eli, because we're having that sound issue once again. Wow. I mean, I'm just floored absolutely that, you know, it's really amazing that in light of all the things that the powers that shouldn't be have done to us, people have had, in my experience, they've had two reactions. One was to fall deeper into the matrix in the Plato's cave, or they realize, okay, this set of things doesn't add up and I'm going to become more awake. So it sounds like your wife made that transition.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say, yeah, back then, you know, I had to come around to that because for me, that was the reason I joined the military, not specifically 9/11, but based off of my view of our country and whatnot. So when she initially told me something like that, I said, you can't start talking like that. You can't believe that. No, that's not true. And here I am, you know, a couple years later going, wow, I'm really glad you brought that up. And, you know, looking at Pearl Harbor, you know, all these things, I'm thinking like, how could I be so blind to that?
You know, that's something that in normal, and by the way, I don't think we've actually fixed the problem yet on your end. You know, that goes to show that, you know, you may be absolutely awake concerning certain things, and it may take some time to get you awake to concerning others. I don't know. Talking to you and a number of others out there, it's amazing this polarity that seems to happen in the minds of so many people where they're like, okay, well, I bought this lie. I'm kind of invested here. My job's here. Most people are not going to say, you know what? I've had it. I'm going to risk everything. And I'm going to go to a place that I've never been before and do some extraordinary things. Now, before we close this out, Eli, because you and I are going to have to talk again. We didn't even barely touch. And we'll also try to get these communication issues worked out. But I know everybody's going to want to know, myself included, what's in the future for you? Where do you see yourself? I mean, you told us where you are right now, but do you have any long-term plans that you would like to share with everybody?
As I said, I think this is the way we fight back as far as self-sustainability. So right now with some of these entrepreneurs out here, business owners who have all these numerous skills and whatnot, I'm trying to put together that now, work with all of our friends to put something that's consistent. A lot of homeschoolers out here and whatnot. So something consistent with basically traditional living, showing children and families just basic stuff, you know. So I just learned just a few weeks ago how to butcher chicken, you know. And I'm thinking, hey, this is something, you know, a friend came and taught me. You know, we know friends who could do everything from build fences to build homes. I think we need to get together, and that could be kind of the pathway that we develop to help others become awake. Because there's probably some people listening now, or if anyone else were to hear this and they hear, oh, 9/11 was an inside job, they're not looking to hear you out and explain. But maybe they are interested in learning how to butcher a chicken or to have chickens to produce eggs. You know, they aren't down that rabbit hole. But I think, yeah, so it's important. So right now, yeah, we're trying to work with those friends to develop, you know, basically a schooling in which people can learn those lessons, whether it's, you know, how to raise chickens, how to build fences, how to, you know, work this in construction, how to butcher different animals, so that we open up that door for people to learn those skills. And I think if they do that, if people learn those skills, they're more likely to question, you know, why the eggs look different at the grocery store, why the meat looks different, why this tastes different, you know, or why did they ever pay for something? You know, that's how cheap it is to do that myself, you know, and that could get them start examining the system basically from the inside out to make those changes in their lives and to start seeing things that you and I may see, but they might not. So that's really ultimately where I'm headed now, is trying to develop that and to get other people on board to join our team, basically, so that we, you know, we will be victorious in the end.
With the benefit of hindsight, I got to ask this question, and then I want you to tell everybody where they can go to contact you if you want anybody, because he may very well be in an undisclosed location for reason of security. So we'll get to that in a minute. But I got to ask. Because I always, whenever somebody does something as drastic with their lives as you have, I always ask, usually in private circumstances, if you had the benefit of hindsight to be able to go back and tell the Eli that before you made this move, with all you understand right now, what advice would you have given that person before you made the move to where you are right now? Is there anything, any advice you would have given that person that would help? Make that transition is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, definitely. I would say get out of the city. The cities are the problems. Even again, from financially, right? I have friends now who, you know, they're, oh, I'm looking for a place here and there. And then I say, oh, where? And they're saying places like Dallas, places like Austin, or any major city, Phoenix. And I'm just thinking, you realize you're going to overpay and get less. So I would say that I would tell my younger self that is the rural areas is where you're going to get the deals. And ultimately, I've accepted, you know, having land is really what the value is. And so I would tell myself that and to invest in that a lot sooner because, yeah, it is being out here. When I first got here, I did work for a title company, which is in the real estate industry. And the prices I saw that houses had been going for, I kicked myself. I think, man, because there was a couple people I knew who were going to Idaho and whatnot. And I'm just thinking, I could have bought a $50,000 house that's worth $300,000 right now in some very small town. I'm thinking, you know, I got a half acre right now and we're happy. And it's I think you and your son talk about it, you know, I view it as practice, having this relatively small area, you know, it's, we have all that we need that when we get more land to use, but I would have told my younger self to get that land in the rural area, both financially and just overall well-being wise, it's the best investment. So anyone out there looking for land or to move and get out of a place like California, do not go to another big city and think you're escaping something, because it's here too. It's, you go to the major cities here, Boise is mini California. Why? Because people who left California and wanted more California, but cheaper.
Yeah, we saw the same exact thing. It's funny because before we made the move to North Carolina, we were living in Texas. And it was astonishing how many people were in the Dallas area. And I was up near Sherman, which is, you know, about an hour away north of Dallas. How many of those people came from California, but like you said, brought California with them? They weren't the patriot minded people like yourself that were like realizing, oh, good night, man. These are all the things. I hate the high taxes. I hate the traffic. I hate all this. And then every single bit of the mindset that destroyed California, they brought with them to these other places. So that's certainly not a way to go about things. Eli, I'm not sure if you're willing to do this, but I mean, is there a place, is there any place that you would like to promote or a place where they could find you? You know, I'll put that in your hands right now. I'm not sure what you want to say or what you don't.
Well, we're in the Magic Valley. So that's Southern Idaho. Twin Falls is a major city in the area. So if you're ever in Twin Falls in the Magic Valley, MS Cafe, that's one place where we have some of our baked goods. It's a Bosnian restaurant there in Twin, really good. So stop by there and support them. And then Collective Studio is also here in the Magic Valley. So if you're in this area of Idaho, they basically, her store has a number of local vendors and whatnot, everything from deodorant to tea to clothes, everything locally made, basically. A lot of people with local skills that they sell there. We don't buy bars of soap from the store anymore. We buy them until we learn how to make them. We buy them from places like that, local people who just make soaps. And Collective Studio is one place. So I would say, yeah, Emma's Cafe and Collective Studio here in the Magic Valley. And then also Provider Farms. If you're in the area, they're all organic, all their cows and everything. That's where you can get whole milk and all dairy products and meat products and know that they're free from any of the jabs and whatnot.
Well, thank you so much for being on with me, y'all. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive.
That go below a Gartha. They want me to chase my sin, but I'm not here to stay with them. Keep a hollow chain, but I don't got a right.